everybody. This is Jamie on Comedy Confession Booth. Today, we actually have two episodes dropping. The first one right now that you're about to listen to with Raul Coley, who is here this week. We did the Comedy Strip Show, among other really fun shows. But later today, around 4:30 p.m., we're going to drop the episode that we'll be recording right before that with the Saturday Spotlight headliner. So if you're like, I don't know who the headliner is, should I get tickets? Listen in 4:30 p.m. and you can hear me talk to the headliner for tonight. All right. I'm going to throw on the episode and enjoy.
We're on.
We're on.
Let's go.
Welcome to the Comedy Confession Booth.
Ah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me, Jamie.
Always, Raul. So we have Raul Coley in the studio, in the booth.
In the booth.
Yeah. It's a good time. He's drinking espresso.
Yeah, double espresso. Very European.
You're so European.
I know. I'm a little tiny coffee. European love that, especially European men, like older men, South European. You sit outside of coffee shops, drinking small coffees, doing nothing, complaining about the world all day.
Smoking cigarettes.
Exactly. That's where I aspire to be. That's where I want to end up in my life.
Me too. That sounds nice. Every time I go to like Italy, that's who I am. Look, in my hand, it looks like a normal coffee.
I actually have tiny hands.
Yeah,
as well.
you do. I wasn't going to say it.
Very girly,
it's kind of rude
girly
to say
tiny
it
hands.
To men.
Oh, well, thank you for thinking that. Keeping that to yourself. Guy's got little bitch hands. I gotta tell him and emasculate him. But
no,
he's got
I
little
didn't
bitch
you.
Hands.
I didn't tell you.
Yeah, it's these aren't myself. Very manly hands, you know what I mean? Like if you want a man like in the bedroom to choke you, like you don't want these hands, do you?
I don't know.
So they're just so
just creepy little.
Yeah, well, I got very upset when everyone talks about Trump's tiny hands. I'm
did
like,
you?
Hey! Donald Trump won't see this, but your friends who are nice with small hands will see this.
It's like, whatever. It's very funny. It's like, I'm not standing up for Donald Trump, but like, don't make fun of his hands. Okay,
yeah,
guys?
Right. When people are making fun of Rishi Sunak for being short, I'm like, hey, there's some short people who are also Indian, not destroying the British economy. You know, pick on him for all of the things he does wrong, as opposed to something that's outside of his control.
So you are basically just like if a Frankenstein put together all the pieces of the right-wing politicians, it would make you, except for their brains.
Yeah, absolutely. As you can see, I'm very, very much like Boris Johnson, a charming, bumbling idiot with ridiculously wavy hair.
I mean, those are words. I would say you're an idiot.
Ow, Jamie! I thought we got on. I thought we were friends.
We do. That's how I talk to my friends. I'm a dick to them. You know?
I would say I'm also an idiot. It's probably why we get on so well.
It's
takes
true.
One to
idiots,
know one.
Idiots unite.
Exactly. Yeah, I would say I'm an idiot. I'd say I'm bumbling at the certain times.
Yeah.
Other times I'm quite articulate.
Yeah, I've seen you bumble. Not on Bumble.
That's, yeah, it's like when you saw me on Bumble and you swipe left, you bitch.
Nah, I hate Bumble.
Oh, really? Why? Because you got to be imaginative and think of an opening line.
Yeah. Don't make me do all the work.
I love that. I feel like it evens the turns the tables. It evens the scores a little bit.
Yeah.
Because like women are like, oh, man, I'm so unimaginative. All they say is like, hey, how are you?
See, the
and
thing
then,
is,
like,
I'm going to be
honest.
When given
the chance on Bumble, just, hey, how are you? See, it's difficult. Difficult.
It's hard. But I will say, I don't think men really care about a creative opening line. I think if they think you're hot and you message them,
men
they don't really
care
what you say.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get like open with some sort of racist like, diatribe and they'd be like, oh, so you want to get a coffee this evening?
I will say,
this lady seems troubled. It should be easy sex.
She seems really sad.
That's men.
Yeah, right in there. It is men. That's why I have so much sex.
You are one very troubled slut.
I'm a troubled slut. I haven't had sex in like a month. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you think it's like playing on your neurology?
Yeah, I think it's making me sadder.
When's the
last time you got laid?
Let's not get into that. That's awkward. That's very awkward. Let's not get into that.
Why? When is it?
No, we're not getting into that. It's not fair.
Was it last night? Did you sleep with James's cat?
No, James doesn't let me take the cat into the bedroom.
I know. She's not allowed into the bedroom.
It's not right.
It's honestly rude.
Yeah. Although I can get it because like she moves around a lot at night.
Yeah.
And as well, she jumps on you when you're asleep. I was napping on the sofa And I just felt like a punch in my stomach. And it was just this cat stood at me, looking over at me. Like,
drooling on
what
you?
What are you doing, you weird little creature?
She's so weird. Has she drooled on you yet?
No. She drools on people.
She drools, yeah.
No, she's not drooled on me yet.
Oh, she drools. She, like, I've, like, been on the couch with Alice and, like, she'll stand up and all of a sudden I'll have, like, a puddle on me.
She just waits for, like, me to arrive and then she's just like, pet her and she purrs.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Does she talk when you get in? Does she go?
Yeah.
Where were you? I was doing all the dishes and you were out with your bitches.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, probably.
I've never figured out. She'd be like, it's weird. I'm you, but my meow back.
Yeah.
I don't really know what I'm talking about. She's like, meow, meow, meow.
Yeah. You can't help it. I meow back.
Yeah, it's just empathy. It's just trying to learn. Interestingly, given that you don't think, you think you're upset because you've not had sex in a month, I genuinely thought I was depressed for a while. And then I had unprotected sex and was like happy again. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, there's some biological, neurological shit in that.
Yeah,
hey.
We got some needs.
Yeah.
Crazy. I like that you specified that it was unprotected. You were like, ah, with the condom doesn't count.
It does count, but it doesn't quite, I don't know. There's something in the cardio, but there is something in that.
It's more cardio.
There is something in that skin-to-skin contact that is just like...
Yeah. I agree.
It's definitely... the reason why most sane people are in happy, stable relationships where they have regular, unprotected sex.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, my friends make fun of me because they're like, Jamie, use a condom. Like, you're so stupid. You sleep... I mean, and in all fairness, because I don't have a steady partner, it's like, yeah, I should probably use a condom.
You are. When you put this out, you're going to get so many Bumble matches. Let me assure you that.
I get the matches. I just don't. Nothing ever comes out of it.
Oh, really?
That's what she said.
Yeah. I was gonna... What do you mean nothing ever comes out of it? Like, it just doesn't lead to anything?
Yeah. I mean, and I just hate dating apps. So I just get distracted. Like, I'll like go on it one day a month. Like, I'll just go on it and be like, no one's messaged me today. Or like, I'll be like, ah, this person's boring. Whatever. Or they don't want to meet up immediately. And then I'm like, whatever, I lose interest.
I don't like dating apps. I find them better. They're for me, they're a bit... I prefer them to, like, meeting people in person.
Do you?
There's a lot of, like, anxiety there. Like, you know, sometimes you're just like, ah, we're getting on really well. Like, lots of flirtatious banter. But is it? Do you know what I mean? Are we just getting on well? Is she just being nice because she's a woman? Do you know what I mean? Whereas, like, on a dating app, you're like, okay, no, there is a clear expression of interest. Like, I know if I'm flirting, I'm not being too over the top. I'm not putting them in a position where they might be slightly uncomfortable and afraid to say. Like, do you know what I mean?
So
there's a clear expression of interest and, like, you know, that's really useful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess, like, for me, I am pretty overt in my interest. If I'm interested in someone in person, like, they know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty useful. But I don't know, sometimes you think someone's being, like, really overt and really interested. That's so, should we go back to my... Oh, no! What the fuck? It's disgusting! Oh, what is wrong with you? I'm like, ah! You just said, literally, word for word, I would have sex with you. There was a joke! Okay, I'm sorry.
It was a joke that I would bang you, okay?
I would never bang you! That's why it was funny! Look at you! You're disgusting!
Women are mean. Women can be mean, but
people can be mean.
Yeah, men are definitely worse.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But I think men are worse because, well, men are like either one or the other. This is obviously very binary and very stereotypical. Men, there's 3.5 billion of them. They're all individuals in their own right,
but men, they're all the same.
Tend to be either one or the other. They either tend to be like, just fucking, what is going on in your life? Who hurt you? Like, you are, there's some sort of incelian vibe where they're just like, I'll be mean to this woman I clearly fancy just so she can't be mean. I'll get on top of this before she can hurt me. Or they're like, they're quite nice, they're charming enough, they're a bit like relaxed, and then like you go back with it, and then like kind of they don't really, they're so afraid of conflict, they're kind of like, oh, I don't really want to be here anymore, but I won't say anything about it or express my feelings. So then you're all in this weird like thing for ages, and just because they can't like find the balls to be like, ah, by the way, not interested yet, and I have not been for some time now.
Yeah.
Maybe should have said this months ago, but they wouldn't even say it then. Do you know what I mean? They'll marry a woman for 40 years I'd be like, I never loved this woman. This was all an accident.
Men are in, but I can't just don't tell get it. They can't communicate.
No, they can't. But I also think they don't like, yeah, they just don't like confrontation.
Yeah.
A lot of men don't like conflict, surprisingly.
How do you feel about conflict? I think haven't really talked about you at all. We need to.
Yeah, we should. I don't know. I'm adjusting to conflict. I have always been a bit of a people pleaser. But as I've got older, I've kind of seen how that actually isn't necessarily... It's not coming from a very moral place. Mm-hmm. It's coming out of the need to be liked and validation. And then actually sometimes, like, when I said men fit in, I was the latter category. I was describing me. Like, I have maybe perhaps led some people on, or even just people, like, it's, I'd say less, like, on a more micro level. Like, sometimes I'm, like, at a bar like, after a show and, you know, you've done really well and everyone wants to talk to you and be your friend. It's like, I want to talk to other people, but, like, somebody will just grab me and be forthright and start talking
to
me.
It's the most annoying.
Because I'm too polite to be, like, even just to find an excuse and be like, I'm going to pop to the loo. I'll catch you later. I'm going to pop and grab a beer. It's like, I'm just there for, like, 2 hours. Like, I have no interest in this person or anything that they say. But they've just held me against the wall and everybody else is too polite to intrude and save me. And I don't have the balls to save myself. So I'm getting adjusted to that. I'm kind of getting more accepting of not being liked. And if there is a conflict, if the resolution is worthwhile, just take that conflict.
Yeah. It's hard, but it's like, it's better.
It takes time to learn. Yeah. You know what I mean? Some people are born with it. Some people go, fuck.
Oh, God, like, I love those people.
I need to marry that person. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that meme? Where it's like, why do like, terrified, beat of males always like end up with like some fierce, angry, shouty lady, and they're like, someone's got to tell the waiters I didn't order potatoes and it ain't gonna be me. Like, that's true.
Like, that's my problem, is I kind of fall somewhere between the fierce, angry lady and people pleaser, but like,
oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm also a people pleaser. Like, I don't really have good boundaries about going too far, or like, I want everyone to be happy, and so I don't put my needs first. But then at the same time, I will 100%, if your steak is not cooked right, I will 100% get that waiter and be like, no, you need the steak cooked perfectly. Like, I will kind of go out, like, people see me, like, people kind of perceive me as like a boss ass bitch sometimes, I think, but then I kind of come back into myself and I people please, and I'm like,
So I'm quite bad with like, it's like people you know, isn't it? Like, but also in business, like, I'm a fucking cold bastard.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like the human being I am when I'm trying to get a refund off somebody who owes me a refund. Because it's the only way you'll get results. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to kind
of. If you're nice and polite, they just won't take you seriously. Whereas if you, like, especially when you're self-employed like I am, when you're a comedian and you're chasing invoices and people are taking the piss and people might not pay. I took Ryan out of court and beat them. Because I'm just like, if you owe me money, or if I'm, like, not getting a refund on this train that was late, or I'm not getting my fee paid in time, that completely fucks up how I manage my life, because I can only budget so much. I have savings, but I budget based on what I expect to come in,
right?
And we all have these 30-day limits. If you've not paid me on time, I'll fucking have your life. Like, I'll come for you. Do you know what I mean? If you're not giving me my refund, I'll ring you. I'm a caramel Karen. I will speak to the manager's manager and give him an earful. But I'm firm but articulate. If you start going and start calling people cunts and shit, like, that's not going to... Can we swear on this podcast?
Yeah, you can swear.
Okay, right. Like, that's not going to get you anywhere. No. That's just... You can't talk to people like that. You're not allowed to abuse them. But if you're firm, horrible, like horrible.
Yeah.
Like, you are incompetent. You represent an incompetent institution. This is a disgrace. I know my rights. Yeah.
You don't have to tell me. I'm like, I am the queen of... Especially in restaurants, just because I've worked in restaurants. So I'll be like, look, I know how the restaurant works. I know how closing the kitchen works. I know how doing this works. So I know that you can seat us. So seat us. Thank you.
Yeah.
They my friends are like I'm not, I don't know. Like, I don't think I'm a Karen, because I don't complain about ridiculous stuff. Like, it's only when it's like, no, I know that you're able to do this and you're being a dick.
Oh, yeah. No, like, that's what I mean when I don't like myself. I'm never complaining about things that I don't think should be complained about.
Like, I'm not complaining about black people.
One doth protest too much, Jamie. That came out of nowhere. I think you mean in reference to Karens.
Yeah, in reference to Karens. Yeah. I'm not saying, no, I love...
Neither am I, for that matter. I'm not calling, like, you owe me money and you have too many black staff. Like, that's not quite what I'm doing. I'm just like, you owe me money. and I'm complaining about something that is justified to be complained about, but I know if I don't complain about it in such a horrible way, like, I want to speak to your manager, you're not good enough, then I'm just, it's,
I think
that money's not going to come through.
I think everyone thinks we're racist now.
You can edit that out. You should edit that out.
No, I'm not going, I don't have time to edit stuff out.
Okay, fair enough. I am racist, so, you know, not towards black people. I won't let you know which race. You
just to the Jews. You can,
well, I'm sat with one.
Exactly. That's
I know one.
Am I the only one you know?
No, obviously I know James.
Hannah Becker.
Hannah Becker, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's name drop all the Jews in Barcelona just so that people know where to find us. You know?
They're at the comedy club underground, obviously planning things.
We're just building tunnels, you know?
Yeah, I know loads of Jews. I'm off to a Jewish wedding, actually, in July.
Really?
Pretty buzzing for it. Baruch
Where?
Hashem, let's go. It's in England, in Berkshire, Hampshire or something.
Nice.
Near Woking. My friend's married a Jewish lady, so his kids will be Jewish.
Yeah. Have you ever been to a Jewish wedding?
Nah, do we get like lift somebody up on a chair? I'm hoping like, I want to lift him up on a chair.
You get to lift him on the
chair.
I want
to wear a cap and shit.
Yeah. You get to wear the kippah.
Yeah.
He's going to, when they get married, he's going to break a glass. And then everyone goes.
Buzzing for the. Like, I'm a fan of culture. Like, I want to go to everybody's wedding.
I want to go to an Indian wedding.
Oh, they're crazy. They are crazy. I just went to one in February for my cousin.
How many Indian weddings do you think you've gone to?
I can't count. That's a high count.
I'm just like, is it like,
I was like, I was speaking to white people when I was like in university, and they're like, I'm going to my first wedding. I'm like, your first? Been like 2000. You just get invited to every wedding, particularly in somewhere like Newcastle or a UK city where it's a diaspora. Is that the correct word? Diaspora, yeah. Diaspora.
We have that in Judaism too. We say the diaspora.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are a pretty diasporic race.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? You guys. Have
I mean,
been
any Jew who
for,
doesn't live in Israel is in the diaspora.
Yeah,
diaspora.
And before, you know, so there was like Jews scattered forever, like Ethiopia. Even in, like, there's a really cool story about there was like an Ethiopian like civil war.
Yeah,
and like Mossad set up like a neighboring country. I can't remember what the country was called. Let's say it's just Eritrea or something. But they like,
I wrote about it recently.
Mossad went there and set up like what they claimed was like a resort where they were going to take wealthy like Americans to jet ski and like snorkeling and stuff. And actually, it was just a complete set up to like evacuate these Ethiopian Jews out. They take them to the resort and then take them to Israel.
Yeah. 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 There's a huge Ethiopian Jewish population in Israel. Yeah. Because they were, I mean, there was basically like I don't want to use buzzwords unnecessarily, but yeah, Jews didn't have the same rights as like other people in Ethiopia. So,
oh really?
Yeah,
that's like pretty much Jews anyway.
Historically. Yeah, I mean, it's true. Okay, let's talk about you.
Let's talk more about Jews, because two things. Like, I'm really interested in culture. Like, I would go to a fucking Taliban wedding if I could. I just want to see how
you
other people.
You probably could. You could, like.
No, I'm a Hindu. Like, Islamic extremists really don't like Hindus. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They think
of
Hindus like Jews the same way. Do you know what I mean? Like, once they find out I'm uncircumcised, I'm in trouble at one of those weddings. But who knows? Might be able to befriend a Taliban insurgent one day in my life.
You're a charming guy. I think you could.
Who knows? You know,
pull anyone
who
over.
Who knows? I should walk up like, mashallah, brother. I'm interested in culture. I used to listen to like an Israeli reggae artist.
Really?
Yeah,
who?
Called Mattis Yahu.
No, I think I've heard of him.
He was sick, but like, I didn't know he was like, because obviously, like, a lot of the reggae artists sing about Babylon and stuff like that, and all these ancient kingdoms. And so, like, he was like, Jerusalem, when I forget you, fire not gonna come from it. And I was like, oh, this is sick.
Oh,
then he had one day with Akon. That's a picture is Orthodox, just like with the hat, long ass curls. I'm like, that guy was black. Like, this guy was fully black,
I love
Jamaican.
That he, like, fully has, like, the.
No, he's like Orthodox fully, too, at least in the pictures I saw. I was like, oh my God, this is. This was not what I was. Mattis Yahu. That makes, the name makes sense. Interesting, this place, like, so do you know how many, like, there's a huge Jewish population down the east coast of England?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why that is?
No, I don't.
It was like round about the time of Kristallnacht, so just before kind of certain Jewish people kind of saw the way the wind was blowing and were like, we need to get out before this gets worse. So they'd get ships and like they'd get ships to England and they'd come in from Eastern Europe and you would often land on the east coast of England. So it's like in really weird places.
Makes sense.
Like very Brexity places, very sort of like smaller towns, cities. Like,
I have heard this, that there's like random towns.
It's on
I didn't
it's
realize
always
it was
on the east coast and it's to do with this. It's like
that makes sense.
It's like Lincolnshire, Scunthorpe has a huge Jewish population. There's a place next to Newcastle called Bensham.
Interesting.
And it has a huge, it's like known in Israel. Like,
really?
If you ask an Israeli, like, oh, do you know about Newcastle, but you know about Bensham? Ah, Bensham, yes. It's like the biggest Jewish school.
No way.
Outside of, like, I think it's Israel and America. It's like, you know, pretty much as close as you get to, like, Oxford or Cambridge for, like, Orthodox Jewish
that
people.
That is, I kind of want to see that. Like,
yeah, but, like,
when I come visit Newcastle, I'll just do a little day trip
little
to
day
Bensham.
Trip to Bensham, I'll take you around. But, like, the other half of the population, like, what we call Radjis.
What's a Radji?
Like chaps. So like sometimes they've integrated and it's like the maddest thing you'll ever see. Like somebody pulling a wheelie on a BMX with like no shirt on, smoking a roll up.
Yeah.
And they've got like a kipper on. And they're like, shalom, war kid, what's going on? And you're like,
oh my God.
What is happening here?
I'm obsessed with that. Oh my God.
You got to check out Bensham.
Well, you would, there's this guy in New York now. His name, he's a Jewish rapper. And his name is Kosha Dills. I love him.
Isn't Lil Dicky Jewish?
Lil Dicky's Jewish, yeah. Yeah.
Lil Dicky's probably one of the, he's the most famous. The best rappers out there.
He's a great rapper.
No, he's not the most. Drake is the most famous Jewish rapper.
Oh, yeah, true.
Aubrey Graham. That guy's very, very openly Jewish.
Yeah, but, well, he's half Jewish, but he's still fully, like, he's still Jewish.
It's got to be through the mother, isn't it? Is that right?
Technically, yeah. Like, people say that, but I have friends who are Jewish through their father and are just still really connected to their Jewish heritage. I'm not going to be like, no, you're not Jewish.
Yeah.
Like, if you were Jewish, like, unless you're, like...
But Judaism is like Hinduism, isn't it? It's one of those religions that it's like, Hinduism is actually impossible to convert. You can't convert to Hinduism. That's why the Hare Krishnas exist.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's like two things. It's kind of quite racist, I think. But like,
yeah.
It's basically like karmically.
There's a guy here who used to do comedy that was Hare Krishna.
Oh, really? Yeah. So Hare Krishna is almost like Buddhism. It's almost like adapting some of the principles from Hinduism and the beliefs. But karmically, what we believe is that we're all like human beings. We're all finding our way back to God through multiple lifetimes. And eventually you'll get back to being a Hindu.
Oh.
And you'll get back to being an Indian. Do you know what I mean?
Interesting.
But also we believe that like conversion is a violent act. Like, because so much of Indian history is defined by like empires coming in and being like, convert to Islam or convert to Christianity under the pain of death. You know what I mean? So it's like conversion is actually seen as, and like Hinduism's not like, you know, you guys have the Torah, Muslims have the Quran, Christians
have
the Bible.
Bhagavad Gita?
We have the Bhagavad Gita, but it's one of many books.
Are
the
you
Bhagavad
impressed
Gita
I
is,
knew that?
Yeah, I am quite impressed you knew that. The Bhagavad Gita was in the Mahabharata. Before that, there's the Ramayana. Before that, is the Vedas. And there's kind of this.
Oh, the Vedas, they reference that in yoga.
Oh, yeah, they would do. They absolutely would do. There's this theory that it's like a long conversation that constantly contradicts itself. Things will get wrong. So, like, I don't know when it became illegal to convert, but it seems like this part of our history between like the 1200s, 1600s
was
a big part where, now conversion is not allowed.
No, we can, Jews convert all the time. It's actually really common for people to convert to Judaism. Like,
isn't it like really difficult? Like, because I know you can convert, but it's like, it takes years. And I read about some guy who like used to, there's a BBC article about this guy who was in a... He was pretty high up in Nazi Germany.
Oh, shit.
And then he would go on to repent and feel so bad for his crimes that he went to like Israel and like spent decades learning Hebrew, learning the Torah, and essentially converted to Judaism. And it took him like 2 decades or something.
Nowadays, it's not like you have to go to a class with a rabbi, and then that rabbi has to like approve you for converting. So you can't just be like, I want to convert, and then they convert you. Like, you have to go through, I think it's like a year long course or something, and like learn the tenets of Judaism. I think you learn like the alphabet a little bit and stuff like that. But
what are the tenets of Judaism?
Well, we created the Torah. So Hannah Becker actually has a really funny joke about like, people are like, oh, do Jews believe in God? And she's like, yeah, we invented him. Like,
he was the first one, Jehovah. And I was like, oh no, his name's Christ. Oh no, his name's Allah.
Yeah, it's like, you would know this actually, because Judaism, well, actually, that's Islam, so it's different. But Judaism, Islam, and Christianity all come from the same.
The Abrahamic religions, they come from Abraham, the sons of which are Isaac and Ishmael. And then Isaac goes off to find like Judaism, and Ishmael goes off to find Islam.
Exactly.
Judaism then sort of schisms into Christianity as Christ becomes the
Oh my God,
you're
prophet. Really like
I'm really
religion.
Into theology. I'm very, very into theology
what did you
and
study
God
in
and spirituality.
Uni?
I studied economics and then political science.
like the opposite of theology.
Yeah, but like I think like in all, when you sort of look at economics, or even as a comedian, if you look at society and individuals, how they're built and what we culturally take as normal, there's just this enormous story dating back to like some of the first humans where it's like every moment is connected into each other. There's like an enormous amount of, and religion was such an important part of that for cultures and people around the world. And I don't buy the argument that religion does more harm than good. You know, people say the same thing about money, but I'm actually like, if you look at the grander story of things, I'm like, before capitalism that we have now, which I don't think is, I think there's lots of things wrong. I'm quite left-wing.
Are you pro-capitalism?
I'm relatively. I'm like left-wing. I'm like, I'm a socialist capitalist, if there is such a thing. Let's maybe not get too deep into that. But I'm like,
yeah,
before like capitalism, we just had like, fucking colonialism. Like, they just sail to a country far away and be like, these people are savages, let's behead them and take all their shit. Before that, it was feudalism. And I'm like, oh, you gotta bend the knee at some fucking inbred fucking ham-eating massive sausage. And you genuinely, if he wants to take your wife, you just gotta let him.
Yeah.
And then before that, it was like tribalism. It was like, I'm just living in a field. Oh, God, another tribe's come and genocided everybody we love.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, there's no, so like, it was just total chaos.
Yeah, everything we see is wrong now was right for a certain period and helped order and structure society and help people be better versions of themselves. And I think religion played a massive part in that. And I'm a very spiritual man.
Yeah.
I've been having debates with
God.
I'd say my own conscience.
But do you thinking about God?
Yeah. So I believe in the idea of a higher power. I'm quite a religious Hindu.
Interesting.
I used to read a version of the Bible every night because I only really had like references of Christianity. Like, I read the Bible when I was like 12.
Wow.
And then I was like a Buddhist for a bit because I felt it more aligned with what I spiritually believed in life. I didn't feel like you'd just be a prick your whole life and just be like, I repent. Heaven, let's go. Just that didn't add up to me. So Buddhism I found a bit more solace in. And then I did a podcast on Hinduism for the BBC and kind of found myself back actually more quite deep. I read a lot of Hindu scripture at the minute. Try to do my yoga, try to do my meditation, and think quite deeply about what the fucking point of all of this complicated shit we call existence is.
Yeah,
and
I think just that's
every
like,
day, walking through Barcelona, I'm just like, looking at all the people, just like, God, so many people with their own lives and problems. And
oh my God,
it's crazy that like we just even have this thing where we're just all kind of, for the most part, chilling. I think it's really impressive.
And well, and everyone has their own world. It's like kind of crazy. Like, if we made a movie about, I don't know, the 4 days that you're in Barcelona, one from your perspective and one from mine, those are two completely different movies.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I spent a week in Naples, and Naples is so unique. It's like just a city of its own. The culture's separate to Italian, never mind.
Really?
Yeah, like, it's to do with the fact that, like, in the, like, Napoleon days or something, like, when Napoleon conquered Italy, like, they had, like, a secret society of people who were like rebelling against Napoleon, and they still kind of never really fully, even though they unified as part of Italy, they never quite fully felt like their language is completely different.
Yeah.
Like, if you say like, how are
That's
you
weird,
in Italian?
It's called Naples.
The Napoli, yeah. But like, if you say, how are you in Italian, it's come stai, very similar to como estoy in Spanish. But if you say like, como estás? Fuck, have I been saying it wrong?
Yeah,
I've been walking up to people going, how am I?
Yeah, cover story is how am
Fuck.
I?
Oh, I've confused that with the Italian. That's what I've done.
Oh my God.
Como
estas? Also, careful with banging on the table because the sound.
Oh, sorry. I'm a very bangy kind of.
Yeah.
Very bangy man.
Yeah, you like to bang,
a very expressive man. Lots of movements going on here. Como estas? Better remember that before I do my first 5 minutes in Spanish tomorrow.
You're going to be like,
oh, hey, how am I? I don't know, bro. You know, I said one joke yet. But in fucking Italian, they're walking in and they're like, you know, it's ciao, come stai? And then in Naples, they're walking in and like, oh, va fa bene.
Oh, God.
What?
Va fa bene.
What is that? Va fa bene. And I'm just like, yeah, it's crazy. It's like such a unique dialect.
In Friends, Joey goes, va fa Napoli. And that's apparently a curse in Italian.
No, va fanculo, innit?
Oh, I don't know.
Va fanculo means what the fuck?
I like that.
Va fa Napoli. What the Napoli?
I don't know.
Is that what that means?
Napoli. That's what he says. I don't know. Over here, we can say, you can also say, ¿qué tal? That means, how are you?
Oh, ¿qué tal? Yeah.
It means, like, what's up?
Yeah, what's up? ¿Qué tal?
But you can say, like, you can say, ¿qué tal? Bien, y tú? Like,
it's all good.
Yeah. Okay, so what brings you to Barcelona this time around? Because you live in the north. You're a Geordie.
Oh, someone's done the research.
Yeah.
Bhagavad Gita. Geordie.
I know shit.
Oh my God, I'm impressed.
I'm going to tell you, I didn't do any additional research prior to this interview. I just know those things.
How did you discover the Bhagavad Gita?
In school, I did a global history class in high school. And I just still, and one of my favorite parts of it was we did a thing on religion. Mm-hmm. So we learned about all the religions. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, Maoism. I don't remember what else, but a lot of things stuck with me, including Bhagavad Gita. Because I also liked how that sounded. I was
Bhagavad Gita. I remember seeing like the RZA, who's like the leader of the Wu-Tang Clan. He did it. He said it on the Joe Rogan podcast, and in his New York accent, it's so weird.
Really?
The Bhagavad Gita.
Bhagavad
Joe,
Gita.
Joe, when you read the Bhagavad Gita,
oh, like,
what is this? But it's actually had quite a profound effect, I think, on the world without the world really knowing. It's very similar, actually, to the Battle of Brevelia, which is like an old Norse story. Well, not the Bhagavad Gita, but the Mahabharata, which
the Bhagavad Gita
is a part of. But also, the guy who dropped the nuke, he quoted the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, shit.
What's his name? Oppenheimer.
Oh, yeah, Oppenheimer. Yeah.
I am death.
I am become death.
That's a quote straight from God, from Krishna, from the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah. He was really into philosophy and theology. And,
yeah, I think a lot of early philosophy.
Did you see it?
No, I've not seen it.
It's a good
movie. What happened. I got all the spoilers. I've read my history textbooks.
It's good, though, because I went to see it with James, and the way they frame it is it's actually like following the Red Scare and the communism trials.
Oh, really?
Maybe
I should watch it. That's different. Like, I'm just like, I've read what happens here. I don't need to also see Cillian Murphy having sex.
Well, I mean, you do, obviously.
It's less for me.
Also, like, people, like, shat on those scenes. They're like, she didn't need to be naked. I'm like, I honestly think it really added to the film.
I haven't seen it, but off that recommendation alone, I'll be like, okay, I'll go watch it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, naked Florence Pugh.
That really offended a lot of people in India.
Really?
Because he was naked when he said that. And I don't know if in real life he was naked when he said that.
Mm.
But they were like, he didn't need to be naked when he quoted our holy book. It's like...
I love that.
I can see the slight upset at that. Yeah.
I could get. That's pretty funny.
Can you imagine if you're just there naked quoting the Quran? Just quoted a chapter from the Bible.
Oh my God. I'm trying to think of
butt
like the
naked
best,
after shagging.
What's the best thing you've ever said while naked? Or like the most like inconsistent with
I don't
being
know.
Naked.
I'm usually quite vulnerable naked.
Are you? Are you a pillow talk boy?
Yeah. That's bad. I think pillow talk, it's a, once you've like come out, it's like a release of endorphins. You sort of like feel safe, don't you? Vulnerable, like, oh, I can feel everything in you.
Yeah.
I heard a story actually about someone in the UK. I probably shouldn't say too much.
I want to know. Name names. I'm kidding.
No, they pillow talked really, really badly. They were like having an affair on their girlfriend with like another person.
Oh shit.
And then they pillow talked really badly about all of their mutual friends. And then I really shouldn't be saying this.
Oh my God.
Some people might know who I'm talking about.
That's okay.
They're based in the south of England.
Yeah, no one based in the south of England is listening to this.
Yeah, okay. So basically, then like this person turned up at the person they were cheating with's birthday party, but with their partner. And the birthday girl, like, flipped the fucking lid and was like, this is what he says when he's coming inside me.
This is what he said about you.
This is what he said about you. And, like, basically revealed that he cussed out all of his friends. He was like, oh, God. This is, like, it's always, because I'm on the outskirts of every scene.
Yeah.
Like, I sort of pop in your scene a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I'm just gone the next part of the world.
Like,
I'm very much a nomadic type of guy. I know you would get on, but I don't get dragged into your little personal long-term beefs. Do you know what I mean? I get to avoid all of these.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is one of the few benefits of...
No beef for you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very lonely, but no beefs.
Yeah.
But maybe that's part of life. Grudges, beefs, personal fallouts.
Yeah, it is part of life. I think you learn a lot from that. So you haven't learned anything then.
This is what comes back to me avoiding conflict. Like, I won't even stay in a place for longer than 7 days. I get the fuck out of there before conflict can arise.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's not a bad strategy. I might have to start doing that.
Yeah. It works. It has its perks, its privileges.
No, that's a good thing.
Wait, so I do, like, I do want to know some stuff. I want to know, like, how you got into comedy, though. Because that's, like, the one, that's the one thing I need to know. I gotta know.
I was 14, and I used to have a TV in my room. I used to stay up and watch. Back then, it was comedy. It was now Comedy Central at the Comedy Store. Back then, it was Paramount at the Comedy Store. Comedy Central didn't really exist in the UK. Paramount was the channel. It was, like, Paramount at the Comedy Store. I used to watch these comedians, like Kevin Bridges on there. There's like a Paul Chowdhury, who like was this Indian guy, talked about being Indian. There's Jason Cook, who like had a Geordie accent.
Mostly like Brits, right?
Yeah, it was like entirely Brits. Well, there was like Americans, Canadians, Europeans based in London.
Right.
They were all British based. And sorry, banging that table.
You saw me like...
Yeah, I just saw you like, stop banging my table. And I was like, oh, people who look like me can do this. People who sound like me can do this. I might give this a try one day. Never gave it any thought after that.
Really?
Yeah. And then I was in university and a lot, like in Freshers Week, everyone was like, oh man, you got such energy. You're like such a hoot. You're always cracking jokes. You should try stand-up comedy. And I kind of had the memory again.
Oh my God. You were one of those. You should try stand-up because you're so funny in conversation, guys.
Yeah, but I wasn't even that funny. Like I was never a really funny guy at school. I was always about something.
Yeah.
I was always up to something. I was scheming.
Ooh.
Like, I was always off the beaten path. Like, I was a club promoter from, like, 14, 15.
Yeah.
So, like, I was always, like, the guy. I was, like, very popular. I had friends, but I wasn't a particularly funny man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think I was cool. So, I didn't need
you
to be
cool.
funny just yet.
You were cool.
But then I was really cool at
school.
I was
shit.
A lot cooler then than I am now.
Yeah.
And the magnitude of, like, this increased world I'm in where it's, like, I'm in Spain, Italy, Portugal, Germany. I got friends in America. Like, I'm such a tiny, tiny fish in this enormous pond we call the world. But back in 2007, 8, 9, Newcastle, when the girls and the boys were all wearing Hollister, and you know, if you were working at Abercrombie and Fitch, you were a model, and like clubs like Tiger existed back then.
I know Tiger.
I was cool.
Back then. I'm not saying I don't believe that you're cool, but it always shocks me when cool people do comedy.
Yeah, it is weird. It's like, what's your angle? What are you doing?
Yeah,
here?
Like, what do you want from us?
You're validated.
Yeah, like, I feel like comedy is, like, made up of a bunch of weirdos.
I think it was twofold. I think on the one hand, when I was younger, and particularly where I lived and where my dad's shop was, there was, like, you know, I realized being funny was quite a good deflection mechanism if I ever faced, like, sort of racism or felt like I was in trouble. I've bumped into hard kids.
Have you used comedy in the face of racism? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that was, like, I cracked more racist jokes than them, and it was like, ah. We can't get this man. You know what I mean? Oh, actually, he's quite funny. He's a better thinker than us.
Yeah.
And kind of would warm people up who, you know, could otherwise, it may have been a very difficult situation.
Do you think
situation.
You've converted any voters?
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't think I'm that important. You know what I mean? People go back home to their wives, their children, their husbands, their families, their societies, and their prejudices. Do you know what I mean?
I think
to convert voters, you have to really spend time with them and take an interest in who they are as a human being, which
I agree.
Most of us don't do. I do my show and then I get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
So it was that element. But then I was about a year away from graduating. And I had a bit of an early life crisis. I had a bit of a breakdown. I'd only wanted to get university. That was my only goal. I'd seen how my brother lived. He's like, he reads books all day and goes out and gets fucking hammered at night. It was
just
the absolute dream life. Like, I have to be living this life. So I worked really hard to get into university. And I was like, that's it. And I was about a year away from graduating. I was like, oh, fuck, life goes on. Like, I've got to do something after this. And I was like, what can I do? What am I good at?
Did your parents also, like, give you a lot of academic pressure?
Not as much as other Indian parents. I mean, they did put some pressure on me, but not as much as other Indian parents. Definitely, I think. As British Indian standards go, I was quite lucky. My parents were quite liberal.
Nice.
Kind of let me live by and large. I think still comparatively to my white friends. I think they were good at reasoning. You know what I mean? My dad didn't really speak English too well. So what they say goes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So as a kid, you don't understand that. And you kind of like need to break this down for kids for them to truly understand actions, consequences, that kind of stuff.
Totally.
But I was a year away from graduating. I basically diagnosed myself with ADHD without realizing what ADHD was.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm going to be late every day. I cannot like work unless it's on my own time. I'm not really stupid. Like, I'm not
to my life.
Smartest, but I know. Hence why you turned up 30 minutes late. But that's me. Have you been diagnosed? Because I got diagnosed in December. And it's really helped.
I need to go get diagnosed. I don't know how much, like, I know it would help probably just to have the doctor like sign off on like, yeah, you have ADHD, which like I basically check every single box. So like I kind of already know I have it. Mm-hmm. Medicine, why do you take anything?
Well, I'm really flirting with the idea of taking Ritalin because quite frankly, I can't focus without like smoking or vaping.
Yeah.
It's really bad. But I'm desperate to quit because I'm also asthmatic. So this shit's not really doing many favors for my lungs.
Right.
And I have quit and I've started. It's just been this routine for like the past 5 years now. Fucking hell. It's been 5 years since I've been on and off tobacco. But like, I'm kind of like, I need to. I've talked to some people. Some people like, didn't work for me. But yeah. Other people like, oh, it's completely changed my life. Like, I just feel born again. Do you know what I mean? Whereas sometimes I just feel like when I give up smoking, I take on so many different jobs. I just feel like I can conquer the world and then I get overwhelmed and then I like just fucking sink into a pit of depression.
Yeah.
And it's just this repeat cycle.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it's usually when I sink in that pit of depression, I start smoking again. And I'm like, okay, I can be a bit more normal and right. focus on some things.
Right.
And maybe realize that other things aren't important. And if the Ritalin can help me do that, then I'll give it a try. But I've just sort of a bit too Indian, a bit too manly.
Yeah.
I'm not taking a drug.
You
to
don't
survive.
Need it. Yeah.
Even though I'm already fucking smashing this thing.
Yeah, that's
you know
drugs.
What I mean?
I mean, like.
Can I vape in here?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. that's the first vape on the pod, so
God, I'm such a loser.
You've just leveled us up.
If I chugged a blunt up or something, like that would be cool.
That would be cool.
Shotgun to fucking like seltzer, like, but I'm like, I'm gonna have my gummy bear flavored vape.
Yeah, it smells amazing.
I'm a bad man.
It smells great. Yeah, oh my god, vapes are I got into the vape life when I did Birthright in Israel. It was like the year of jewels. And so
those were too much. I had a jewel in in New York and I nearly had a heart attack. But in New York, they don't have nicotine limits. So this is 20%. The average in the EU is 20%. Some are a bit less. You very rarely find ones more. And the jewel I got was like 50%.
Yeah.
And I just took a puff. I think I'm going to die. Like,
yeah,
somebody
yeah.
help.
You had to like.
I can't afford an ambulance in New York.
No,
oh, no.
You cannot. Oh my God. Healthcare in New York is stupid.
Can we talk about. Do you know why those Jewish people are living under those tunnels?
No, I don't know.
You're not part of that.
I'm not
you're
part right. of
you're
that.
From New York. You're Jewish.
I'm from New York, but I'm not like a Hasidic Jew. Like I didn't grow up in.
Why? Why the tunnels? Why did they need to like? It's the funniest
I don't
thing I've ever.
No.
Did you see the tweet?
Yeah, I saw the tweet. It's fucking funny.
I told you I wasn't crazy. I was hearing Jewish voices under my flat.
It's so funny. It's just like I don't get like why guys like this does not make us look good. Like I feel
like what's the purpose? I mean, I know accommodation is pretty hard to find in New York, but
yeah, I don't know. What's crazy to me is like everyone thinks Jews control the media, but we're so shit at PR. Like,
yeah, it's really interesting that because you guys suck at PR. If you do control
we have
the media,
worst PR.
You're doing a terrible job. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Terrible, terrible. I think like Jewish people are. I think that by in terms of like the population of the world, they're overrepresented in a few industries.
Do you know why?
I think I know why, yeah. I would say they're overrepresented in media, comedy particularly, and obviously finance and banking. I think finance and banking comes from the fact that, like, it's in Sherlock Holmes, not Sherlock Holmes, Shylock in Merchant of Venice.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's due to the fact that Christians and Muslims
Jews, they
couldn't lend with
money.
Interest. Yeah,
yeah,
it was, like, against their religion, but Jews could. Therefore, Jews got overrepresented in finance, and capital is a zero-sum game.
Exactly.
So the more you accumulate, the better off you're going to be, the more you're going to be represented,
yeah.
Which is where all these rumors come about the Rothschilds and whoever else and so on and so forth. And then with their media and so I think as well, like if you have more capital, liberal arts, media, stuff like that, like privileges tend to be like a capitalist. Like you this is a like rich people get to do more fun stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they get to pursue more
right.
leisurely
hobbies
and jobs.
Right, and then people are mad at some Jewish people for, and not all Jewish people have money, but people are mad at some Jewish people for having money. And it's like, well, it's your fault because that's the only job you were letting us do.
Yeah,
so,
exactly that. And also, like, there's every chance you could have, like, and it happened. Like, the thing is, people, like, look at, like, World War II. It's like, this kept happening for ages. It's like, you know, Charles in France, like, expelled them. They've been expelled from Spain. They've been expelled from fucking everywhere.
Everywhere.
So it's like any day tomorrow. Some fucking king could just go, it wasn't me who fucked up the entire economy. It was the Jews. Blame the Jews.
Yeah.
And then suddenly their lives are fucking just upended and they've got to leave. And obviously they're going to...
Upended.
Upended. Upended. how do you say that?
Upended.
Upended. Upended.
That's the first time I was like, is that a British thing?
Like, say some words wrong. Like, I read them, I don't like hear them, and then I go like, I was saying three-piece suite for ages. And they're like, you mean three-piece suit? And I'm like, I don't know. I've got the suite. That's what we're working with.
Oh my god, I love that for you. But no, do you know
comedy
why,
particularly, I feel like they pioneered comedy. I think there's Jewish people who read like old Jewish jokes, that kind of stuff. It's American New York Jew thing. And as well, have you seen The Last Laugh?
No, I need to.
Oh, it's so good. But that kind of gives me quite a good, like, because I think people who do find themselves in comedy kind of at an early age, for whatever reason, they might have trauma themselves.
Yeah.
But it might just be like familial trauma. It might just be like they had to understand the actual true dark underbelly of what humanity is capable of.
Yeah.
Quite early on. So quite early on, I was dealing with a lot of shit like partition and stuff like that. I'm really realizing that like a young teenager, what my grandma had gone through, and being like, fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Exactly.
And even like my Sikh uncles and stuff, when the Hindus were genociding Sikhs in the 1980s. I know that like one of my uncles who lives like round the corner from my family, when the Hindus were genociding the Sikhs after Operation Blue Star, like 1984, 1985, he had to like chop his hair off. He was a Sikh with a turban. He'd always been bald as I don't. He chopped his hair off, hid in a boot, and like somebody drove him all the way out the country.
Oh,
and then he flew
God.
To England. Yeah. And
That's
he got there
wild.
As like a refugee. Yeah. But I think like Jewish people particularly, like it's almost in your history to sort of look at the Holocaust and kind of think about that quite deeply. And I think that's kind of why when Jewish people are sort of raised to kind of, you have to deal with that dark underbelly of humanity quite early on, quite easily. What you find is like the people who do the darkest jokes, they're doctors, they're medics, they're police, they're firemen, the people have to deal with horrible shit on a daily basis. So you've got young kids whose brains maybe aren't quite ready to comprehend what they're about to see. The easiest thing becomes to joke about it. And that's why you have like such luminaries like Sarah Silverman, David Baddiel,
Sacha Baron Cohen,
that's his name.
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
yeah.
My favorite thing is just the fact that like in Borat they just speak like the fake language is actually a real language.
I've not seen Borat in ages.
Oh my god, it's so good. They speak like, so he speaks Hebrew in the movie. They speak Hebrew and Yiddish. I don't know. Anyway, so another fun fact for you is, so the reason that Jews like control Hollywood, right? It's not just about money. It's also about when did most Jews move to the States, if you think about it. 1920s, 1930s. That's when movies were starting, right? But the rest of the States, right, people had jobs like farmers and, you know, worked in companies and making cars and factories and stuff like that, right? Very industrial. And Jews were, they weren't hiring Jews. No one wanted to hire Jews.
Yeah.
So the Jews were like, okay, well, we got to do something to make money. What are we going to do? And no one had
so
really.
So you were like the real early city slummer immigrants, you know what I mean?
The
like
Warner
the
Bros.
El Raval.
Yeah.
Like residents.
Oh
first.
My God. If you see the tenements in New York, it's like insane.
If you read Malcolm X's autobiography, he talks about like one of the only white people who like showed him humanity and respect was, I forget his name. It's like, man, let's just call him Herbert or something, or Hank. He's this old Jewish man who kind of saw black people going through the same things that Jewish people did when he arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took in a lot of black people, had them work for him, et cetera, took care of them and treated them just as human beings in a way that, you know, Malcolm X said he'd never really experienced at the hands of white people except for this just one Jewish guy.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of like black Jewish unity. There's like there's an Instagram account, I think, called Black and Jewish Unity, but there's a lot of like alliances there. And so that's why
Black Jews are really impressive.
Oh, they're the
coolest. They're like, well, I only know two. It's like Lenny Kravitz and Drake. And I'm like, they're doing some big things. You know what I mean?
Best. Oh my God.
Was Prince Jewish, or have I made that up?
I think you made that up.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of who else is like a famous black Jew. There are some, and they're the coolest. They're the best.
He's got two lots of suffering.
We got Drake. Oh, Davy Diggs. I don't know if you know Davy Diggs.
Who that is,
was in Hamilton, but he's like a rapper. He's an amazing, amazing rapper.
Oh,
like,
really?
One of the best in the world, I would say. Like, I don't listen to much rap, but if it's like super, super high quality, like amazing, something stands out about it, I'm like, fuck yeah. He has this band called Clipping that's like wild. And he also has a song called Puppy for Hanukkah.
Oh.
Like Puppy for Hanukkah. Do, 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 do. I don't know. It's fun shit.
Puppy for Hanukkah.
Puppy for Hanukkah.
Sounds pretty street, pretty gangster.
Pretty gangster. Yeah. Okay. Back to comedy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm curious. So, what have you been writing about lately? Like, Because
I struggle right these days. I've got so much time, like booking gigs, dealing things with my agent.
Oh yeah,
like,
you have an agent now.
Yeah, video editing is a huge amount of time.
Yeah.
Consuming, boring, I hate it. It's like reduced with respect. All of this has taken away the humanity of what we do. And I don't resent it entirely because I've seen a lot of people who deserve every success they've gotten from getting their ass up and working with all this stuff. But for some of us who perhaps a bit more ADHD and struggle with it. Like for me, uploading clips when I have ADHD, it's like I just like I'm scrolling. And the next thing I've been scrolling for 2 hours and I was meant to like produce the content as opposed to consume it.
Yeah.
For me, trying to do content when I have ADHD is like trying to sell cocaine when every morning I wake up and suck dick for crack.
Yeah.
Like that's
what a level. Like you're like, yeah, this like regular thing I have to do is really like just like this totally relatable scenario.
Because it's like the next day I'm 2 hours later and I'm like, what the fuck? I've just wasted such an important amount of my day. I could have been doing actual things or even just having human experiences or being happy and I'm just scrolled through all this.
I could have been selling coke.
Horrid shit when I was meant to be giving them the horrid shit to consume and be like, oh, I like this person I've never met.
Yeah. No, I do this. I've been watching so many clips lately because I just go on because I'm like, oh, let me put this clip up. And then
you start like, it's kind of in comedy into a competition. Do you know what I mean? Like you kind of used to be a bit more happy. But when you're like, so when you're all gigging together and you kind of, everyone like, and you're starting out, everyone wants everyone to do well and they want the room to be hot. So it's just a bit nicer and easier. But then when you're in a competition, you're like, oh, I hope that person I befriended dies. I hope they hope everybody struggles but me, so I get through. And like comedy,
I like that
on,
voice you just did. Very like big mouth.
Oh, hey, Jamie. Hello and welcome to Comedy Confession Booth with Jamie Lerner.
Ooh,
it's the U.S. trailer voice.
I might
this
take that.
Fall.
I'm gonna clip that what you just said, and that's gonna be our intro.
What's spring in America? Spring.
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 What about spring?
Like, cause you know you have like this fall.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm used to hearing like, this fall, get ready for a comedy confession booth. It's a movie all about Barcelona, Jamie's journey through the city with various comedians coming to you this spring.
Wow.
Even though I said this fall.
I'm clipping that. That's it. That's our intro. That's perfect. You actually, honestly, the reason you don't hear this spring that much is because more blockbusters are released in the fall because then award season is the winter.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. Because, I just like adverb.
And no one wants to go to the movies in the spring.
No. Comedy used to be seasonal. When I used to come out, many years ago now, to like Amsterdam, they told me they didn't operate between like May and August. I was like, what? They were like, it's just too hard to get people out of beer gardens and inside.
Yeah.
It's like you'd rather just sit in the sun for the few months you have it.
Yeah.
Because that's interesting because now in the UK, like it's kind of different. Like it is probably tougher, particularly with the summer. You get like stuff like Euros, football, this kind of stuff, and it becomes a lot harder to put on comedy when you're competing with them. But like the Edinburgh Fringe is the biggest comedy festival in the world and it's
right the only the nice summer. Month in like, Edinburgh.
People are always like shocked by me because like at Edinburgh and in the UK, I'm pretty sensible and pretty sober. And I don't have a summer. I can't remember the last time I fully enjoyed a summer. 2012, I went to the Notting Hill Carnival in August. Like I just wasn't thinking about writing an hour, perfecting that hour. Filling the room,
oh my God.
et cetera. Like, so when I'm in Europe, I'm a real good time.
Yeah.
You know, I like to drink, I like to stay out, I like to have fun. And then when people see me at Edinburgh in the UK, it's like, oh no, I don't drink. Like, I'm just a seasonal sessioner.
Like, I don't know. When I saw you in Edinburgh, you were like, Jamie, hang out, let's do drugs.
I never said that. I don't do drugs.
You never said that. Not drugs. Just weed. Weed's legal here.
But I don't do it in a country where it's illegal. I work for the BBC, Jamie.
I'll
I wouldn't
cut
partake
that.
In illegal
I
activities.
Forgot that. I didn't. You work
no,
for
it's
the
fine.
BBC.
I've denied it here. I've got my podcast, BBC Newcastle's NUFC Total Sport Podcast.
So cool.
Get to talk about Newcastle United.
I'll cut that. Bitch, that part. That
it's fine. I've got deniability. You lied.
Why
you...
did I just say bitch?
I cut you, bitch.
What is wrong? I don't know why I just said bitch. That was so weird.
I cut you, bitch. I cut that bitch. Which bitch? Who? Don't cut a woman, please.
That was so weird. How did that come? Does that ever happen where you were thinking one thing and then another?
Yeah,
because
you said, I'll cut that bit. And then sometimes in your head, bit is followed by CH.
Yeah, that's exactly. Thank you.
It's like me walking around going, come on, stoy. My course. And I knew it's come on, stoy. But I learned come on, stoy a long time ago. And in my head, I've gone, oh, okay. I don't have to ask how you are in Italian because come stai is very similar to come stoy. And in my brain, I've then gone, como estoy is now how are you, when no, it's not actually how am I.
That's how am I. You could say, como estamos, how are we?
I just say, que tal from now on.
Yeah, just say,
que tal, como estás, tú bien?
Sí, bien, bien, bien. I guess I could do fine in Spanish.
I think you just got to kind of have the confidence, not be afraid to fail, but kind of have fun with it. Like, and I think I have an energy when I'm on stage anyway. Also, it helps that, like, I've communicated with a lot of people who don't speak the same language as me. Mm-hmm. Like, my grandma didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Punjabi, and we lived together, and we just, a lot of gesturing, a lot of, like,
so you never learned
eye
Punjabi.
Contact, a lot of, I tried it, but I think the ADHD, like, my parents tried to put me in school, they were like, okay, like the grandma's moving in, we won't have to teach him. I think that probably didn't help. I think my mom thought, like, oh, with her being there, but actually what happened was she just learned more English and then we just gestured in our own little language and like spoken accents more than anything. but I feel like having an intermediary or someone who would be sitting there sort of helping me break it down, like, this is why this, or whatever, that might have been better. But at that point, my mom was very busy with the shop. So no regrets, but she put me in classes, but I was just bouncing off the walls all the time. So just run out of class. Like, our Raoul's gone missing again. Not again!
No!
I ran out of the house when I was a baby, actually.
Really?
My sister left the door open and apparently I just crawled out naked.
Oh my God.
And my grandma wanted to fucking kill my sister. Like, I was fully missing. And they, like,
how many siblings do you have?
Two, an older sister and an older brother. I'm the youngest. And they went looking for me and they just found me naked with like a couple. And they were playing with me, they were quite friendly. Like, oh, is this your baby? Like, yeah, we just saw him crawling across the road. We're like, we should probably help the little
fella. Probably get that baby out of the road.
Yeah.
Is that your only near-death experience?
Oh, no, I've had loads.
What's your latest or most exciting? What's the best near-death experience you've ever had?
Right. I've rolled my car over 8 times with an OnlyFans star in the front seat. I thought I had died.
Wait. What?
Yeah.
You rolled your car over?
8 times.
Like it flipped?
Yeah, 8 times.
With an OnlyFans star in the front seat?
Yeah.
Why is that part important?
Because you said, what's the coolest near-death experience? And like at the time, I was thinking, oh, this is cool. I was like, oh, fuck, I'm dead. And I killed this girl I was dating. Like, what? I was like, oh, no, this is horrendous. But then like, a few months later, I was like, oh, it's kind of pretty rock and roll, yeah.
Yeah, because now you get to tell everyone that you're near death.
You know
experience.
What? I think you're the first person I've told. Like, I've always told that story of me crashing the car, but never brought up the fact that there was an OnlyFans star in the front. But now I'm just like,
I don't know if that makes you sound cooler or less cool, to be honest.
Oh, sorry. This is my.
Is it
6
time
PM
to go
alarm.
To the train to go to Sea Chase?
I don't know. I can probably give it a while. I just have alarms at late in the day.
You know do you have to go back anywhere or you're ready? Because the train
station's
right here.
I can just go straight. Is it Sands?
No, you can actually go to Estacio Francia. It's like literally like a 5-minute walk from here.
Right, yeah. No, I've got time. Don't you worry. I'm closing anyway, so it's
a long
time
away. You're good.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Sea Chase
is fun.
Yeah, it's a great time. It's like gay Benidorm.
Yeah, you'll be...
It's just like
that
where
crowd
Brits
is for you.
Who are gay, but who don't like hanging around with like... Like all of the segregation of the straight Brits.
Yeah.
But they're just a big gay. You know what I mean?
The segregation. I love the gay Brits. Like, people are like, oh, Sea Chase is like, you know, there's a lot of old British people. And I'm like, honestly, like, yeah, there's also a lot of young people, but mostly everyone's British. And actually, the last time I did it, a woman did walk out on the show because me and James talked about being Jewish. That's a story for another time.
No. Let's get into this. Why was she upset that you were Jewish?
Well, it was like November. My mom was in town. So yeah, it was November.
The worst month to have Jews present.
Yeah, no Jews allowed.
As a Sagittarius, yes. I fully understand.
You're Sag?
Yeah, I'm a Raju Sag.
I'm a Sag Moon.
Sag Moon. What do you mean Sag Moon?
My sun and rising are in Aries, and then my moon is in Sagittarius. Do you know there's different signs?
Different signs. Sagittarius is great, but I don't know what this moon sun shit is about.
Oh, yeah.
I'm spiritual. I'm not like astrological.
It's the same thing. No, I'm kidding. As a white girl, my spirituality is astrology. It's the horoscope.
Fucking Mercury is in retrograde. Mercury is in retrograde, motherfuckers.
Oh, fucking. I hate when Mercury is in retrograde. It fucks with everything.
I don't even know what it means.
It means that your travel plans are going to go wrong and electronics are going to break down.
Mercury's been in retrograde for a long fucking time for me then. I'm always on delayed trains and planes.
Mercury goes into retrograde.
Did you see how Geordie I went there? Yeah. Trying to complain about planes and trains. I was like,
That's you.
Yeah.
My Raoul impression is, I'm a Geordie. That's my impression of you.
Why did you sound Estonian? This is what you sound like, Raoul.
That's what you sound like.
That's not what I sound like. I think I like change my accent on a day-to-day basis depending on who I'm talking to.
I change my accent on a day-to-day basis depending on who I'm talking
exactly.
to.
Exactly. Mine's like less Geordie because I'm talking to Europeans and like they need to understand me.
Yeah, fair enough. I know. I feel like in Edinburgh you're way more Geordie.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm like, these guys can't understand me more. It's just coding, really.
Yeah.
And I've always done it depending on the audience I'm speaking to. Yeah.
Yeah. I do that. Sometimes I'll go into full New York if I...
Hey, yo, dog, what's happening, B?
Like, oh, you know, I'm a New York Jew. Let's hear it for the New York Jews in the house.
Like, I'm Jamie, the 8th member of the Wu-Tang Clan. Brooklyn represent Bed-Stuy.
Bed-Stuy.
Staten Island.
Oh, my God. No, fuck Staten Island. Never.
Why? I went to Staten Island.
Bad. It smells so bad there.
I went to Staten Island.
Did it smell?
Nah, but it was shit. There was nothing.
Yeah,
I went because of the Wu-Tang Clan and then, like, walked around the botanical gardens, which is some of the worst I've seen. Have I seen them live?
Yeah,
but it was rather depressing.
Why?
Well, because it was like fucking last year. Like, it was just, you know, yeah, you saw them in their 20s, in their heyday, in like the late 90s when they were coming up. These black kids from Staten Island who never thought they were gonna, like, in a million years be living what they're living and just being part of that energy. If you ever watch Method Man do his performance at the Source Awards, you can just see an energy there. His performance is electric. So, firstly, Method Man wasn't on this tour. I have seen him separately in Detroit, but Method Man wasn't. It was the Wu-Tang Clan without Method Man. There's a bunch of 50-year-old men, like, just getting their last payday with Nas. And, like, one of them was like, hey, yo, Dublin was bouncing, London. You ain't got that energy. We want to see you bounce. We want to see you bring that energy, make some noise. I'm looking around like, bro, we're all 30+. We're here because we have disposable income. That's why we could pay the £40 ticket price. We have disposable income. We have got that because we sacrificed energy. We're not getting down to our knees and jumping up. We're just going to sit here and be like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, these songs I recognize. Yeah. These names I recognize. Unlike all this new hippity hop I see, which makes no sense to me. These mumble rappers, what's going on?
Oh my God, it's so weird. I'm not a huge rap person, but...
Oh, really? Cool, yeah. What music do you like?
Pop punk.
Oh.
That's not surprising.
I had a huge pop punk phase. I still like my pop punk.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, for a lot of people, it's a phase. And I'm like, why does it have to be a phase? Like, fuck it. Like, there's still great bands that are pop punk.
Crazy. Because you see, like, people who got into hip hop when they're younger, maybe they're not part of the culture. Like, they're not part of African American culture.
Yeah.
They're like 45, still wearing snapbacks and like 3/4 shorts and baggy. But you very rarely see like a 50-year-old fucking emo, do you? Like, some motherfucker just still like in super skinny jeans, fringe. Eyeliner, like, you just very rarely see that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we're going over time a little bit, but that's okay. Yeah, no, you don't see it anymore. I want to ask you just a couple things and then we'll close it out. Who are like your favorite comedians right now?
Right now?
And you could say famous or local or just like people that you love watching or your favorite or inspirations too. Just your favorite comedians.
Right now, inspirations have always been like Kevin Bridges was a huge inspiration. Dave Chappelle, I even still think for the controversy he's caught recently, a lot of things I don't necessarily agree with that he said. The Dreamer, like the end of The Dreamer was such a poignant way to end a special about he's in his dream. It's like, he was like high in a club and he's like, I'm living my dream right now. And then like some guy was like on a table, loads of women. And then he's like, and then I looked at him and I was like, oh, he's probably living his dream right now. You know what I mean? I'm in the club, all these bitches, and Dave Chappelle sat opposite me. And you got to dream and make sure your dream is stronger than other people's dreams.
Yeah.
For your dream to like exist. And like, I was like, that's really, like a real unique way of talking about manifestation. And I think Dave is really, really good at that. Cat Williams, always and forever. Yeah. Absolutely love that man. I listened to him on the Joe Rogan podcast recently. Within 40 minutes, this man had argued that Atlantis had existed. Like, gods built the pyramids and like fucking, what was your, like the hobbits existed. Nothing about like, gotta get out of bed in the morning and get shit done. No pep talks, not about comedy, just like, let's talk about monsters and aliens. She's like, that's why I love him, man. That guy's got some, he's having a deeper spiritual conversation with the gods that I can only dream of. Yuriko Katani, who's a big fan. She's more of a local British comedian. She's wonderful. She's a Japanese lady. Has a wonderful perspective on British culture, which only like a Japanese person could have.
Cool.
And it's like a real insight into like an outsider in, like looking in. So look, I really love Shane Gillis at the minute.
I just love
what he's doing. I love how he holds himself. He's just a guy having fun. He's not thinking too deeply. He's not taking any overt political sides. Yeah. He's just trying to be funny. But he's still saying things that are political and poignant. And that's something I've always aspired to do. Who else? Chris Rock was the original. Like, that was the first stand-up I ever saw.
I can see that for you. Because like
Bigger and blacker.
Yeah. I mean, you have a lot of energy on stage. You got this like really like kind of like fucking with the audience a bit. Like,
yeah. I think Fessmark wrote, he has the rat-a-tat delivery of like Chris Rock. I would have probably like internalized that from watching him from quite a young age. I've seen everything he's done. Well, Bridget Christie, I read her book A Bick for Her. It was like a feminist seminal. Like, she won the best show at Edinburgh Fringe. She's very quirky, very off the wall with her thinking. I quite like it, but also it's quite a good, like an interest in how it connects an audience and sort of just relate to experiences that society aren't talking about that are for you, because the whole book was called like A Bick for Her, which like Bick's a type of pen in the UK,
right? We have Bics.
Yeah, like, why do you need a Bic for her? What makes this a particularly female pen? And just the deconstruction of that really made me laugh. Her husband actually is also a great comedian, Stuart Lee.
Very technically gifted.
Very technically gifted guy. Very well thought out. I just think technically there's no better comedians. Locally here.
Yeah, you? Who are your favorites? Oh my God, me?
Yeah.
No one's ever said me before. You?
I like Ewan a lot. He's clearly,
Ewan's great.
I think like he's very much a comedian's comedian. He very much tests the boundaries of what he can get away with and whatnot. I think you're all doing really impressive things. Like, fucking, when I met Kyla, I had no idea she was just like a superstar.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Now she's selling out like the Cork Opera House. She still has my flip-flops. Where are my fucking flip-flops, Kyla?
Kyla, give Raul back his flip-flops.
Yeah, I left that bar barefoot because I was too drunk. I fell into a taxi and then fell out of it immediately because I had to vomit.
Oh, good. Like,
you still got my black Havanas. Give me back my black Havanas. Hector really makes it. We have a very similar, I think, sense of humor, and just a lot of our jokes are crossed over, like alarmingly so.
Oh,
stuff about Duolingo and stuff like that. Yeah, well, we both noticed it. He's a little soulmate of mine, even though I don't know him too well. Locally in the UK right now, there's a guy called Liam Farrelly, Scottish guy.
Cool.
Incredibly funny. Maria's really funny.
Who?
Maria here. She's really funny.
Mariah.
Boston Mariah. I think it's a British pronunciation.
Yeah. People call her Maria accidentally.
Yeah, James is funny. When you and James did my night at Edinburgh, you crushed it. And that's not an easy room. It's like 100, 110.
It's easy,
but I set it upright, but it's like, it can go rough. Like, and for some of the Europeans coming through, I'm like, because it's not quite the same as other fringe rooms, I think. You get predominant, like a lot of walk-ins.
From
it's quite a rowdy bar.
I guess that's
Three Sisters.
Yeah, I'm like, I like a rowdy, like it kind of takes me back to like my New York.
Yeah.
And like here I host, like I used to host the Friday night show here a lot,
mm-hmm.
Which was like a 10 p.m. Friday night, like everybody's getting drunk. Like that, I started to find like really my voice like by hosting that crowd, which is like weird, but fun. You know?
So, but it's like here sometimes in Europe, they can be so, you've really got to get into them to get them out. You know what I mean? They're friendly.
Yeah, it's like,
I kind of like audiences where if you fail, they're going to fucking let you know.
Yeah.
But if you succeed, they're going to fucking let you know. Whereas Europeans are like, are you failing? Are you succeeding? We don't know, but we're glad you're trying. Thank you for being
that's
present.
That's literally what it is. Like, every time I do a set, I walk off being like, well, I did a bomb. It wasn't amazing. Great. Like,
one guy I think is really good. And I think that's kind of what I try to do with my comedy. I don't think it's really pretty useful anymore because there's so many experts in their own field. But like Mark Steele, he did a show called like Small Towns, where he basically went to towns. in the United Kingdom, read all about them, and then like did just an hour of stand up on this particular town.
Whoa,
and it was really good, really interesting. It is hard, but I think if you're willing to put in the work, like for me, if you're built that way, like I'm like him, or it's like, what the fuck is going on here? Why are you people different to me? We're not different. What is it that makes you different?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What is it in these moments, the history, the geography that defines your culture and defines essentially the way you think and how you perceive the world? And so like I've kind of, particularly in my early days, it was really good. And I think this is why I've been able to be very fortunate to like build such a wide net, like a gig in Lisbon. I've got my scene there. I've got my scene in Berlin and Germany. I've got my scene in Belgium and the Netherlands. I've got my scene in all over the UK. And I'm part of the Scottish mob. I'm part of the Northwest mob. I'm less so in London these days, but I still got links there. The Northeast, obviously.
Yeah.
Scandinavia here, obviously. And it's because I like, when I started to take a little interest, I've got all these little jokes that kind of work. They really do work. It's just like, this is how I perceive you. Like, even just like a couple I was trying the other day about like, you know, what is it about the potatoes here that make them so courageous? Like, did they fight Franco or something?
Oh my God.
Like, and I'm going to do 5 minutes in Spanish tomorrow and try and drop that in Spanish. It might not translate, but we'll see.
¿Por qué las patatas son bravas?
Yeah. ¿Por qué está bravas? If I can find a synonym in Spanish for courageous, that's a bit more
that would be better.
Yeah, because it's changing it from like what makes it, because usually what makes them bravas, patatas bravas, that's what they're called.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you get the meaning of courageous immediately in English, so I need to find a synonym there. But it's kind of like working against it. I've had a very privileged time and I've been very fortunate to lead it, but I know a little bit about a lot.
Yeah.
What that means is nowadays with this Instagram, they're like, there's so many people who are just better than me because they live there every day. And they can have that. I'm here for a week as an outsider going, oh, this is what weird. And then I'm moving on.
Right.
Whereas like somebody who's here for like years can build this brand. This is what this American thinks about Catalonia. You know what I mean? Totally. This is what this Russian person in the Netherlands thinks about that. And they've been able to like really build and expand because they've just focused and zoned in on something that a lot of people there can relate to. But I've always kind of been a bit more nomadic, and again it's that ADHD thing of just trying to consume everything. You gotta put in a limit here. Well,
I know, I get that. It's like, but I honestly, I don't really write jokes about Barcelona that much because it's like there's not that much. Maybe I should, but it's just not something that is the most. I'm just like, I live here and I do comedy, and like those things aren't related.
Yeah, I don't think it's better, like, because it's not relatable across the globe. You can't take stuff about Barcelona to Edinburgh, although I kind of do the
sometimes same. Sometimes
you can. I do things like, you know, I'm talking about white kids in Bradford with Indian accents, but it's just if you explain it
so that they understand it. Yeah, like Mariah break it had down. A bit in her split hour that we did last year where she was talking about like how Barcelona is a sexy city and you go to the beach and like, but you just hear like British stag dudes, like people relate to that in Edinburgh. Like everyone's been, most people have been to Barcelona.
Yeah. Like, and most people know, like, because I can't remember, it was fucking Hannah and, I love Hannah and Luke as well, by the way. I think they're really, great. Really funny. Hannah and Luke, they were there the other day talking about, Florida man.
Oh my God, Florida man.
Yeah, they're like, what's the equivalent in Europe? It's British man. It's always British man. It's always like British man snorts 4 grams of cocaine and tries to fight a swan in Venice. Like that is always the headline.
Yeah, that's the European Florida man is a British man.
No, you can relate to that stuff. It's kind of, but I like these sort of cross-cultural things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to work on a bit where it's like, I think the reason we sort of like have stereotypes about other people is because like the stereotypes are formed by people who can speak their language.
Right.
From another culture.
Right.
So like I think people think French are sexy because like one of the most common words in French is like, no, for them, like they think
what
they're sexy.
One of the most common
sort of
French phrases is voulez-vous coucher avec moi?
Oh God.
Miss Aguilera.
Christina Aguilera, Missy Elliott. Oh my God. Take me back to those halcyon days. But like them, for other languages, bitte means like please.
Yeah.
So you got all these Germans and Dutch people, they're saying bitte, but in French, that's dick. So they're probably just walking around laughing, being very like, you know, laissez-faire, like dick, 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 dick. And it's like, oh, Germans, very against rule, very scary. Why? Because what's the most common word in their language? Die. Die. Well, I was like walking around Berlin for the first time. I was 18. God. It felt like being that episode of The Simpsons where like Sideshow Bob's walking, it just says die, Bart, die everywhere.
Well, it's like I have been talking about, like I went to Hamburg once, and to me, it's so different from like Munich and Berlin, because Berlin is like no one's actually German there, and Munich it's like German Disneyland.
Yeah, it is like they use the exact same. It's like German Disneyland.
But in Hamburg, like everyone's just German, and it's kind of scary because they all have German accents.
Like, but also, our reference of Germans just like Hitler's giving speeches. Do you know what I mean? We don't really have any frame of reference.
No, I have not. Like,
you don't watch German
up.
Speeches unless it's Hitler, unless you can speak German itself.
And especially as a Jew, I grew up like literally. My reference to Germans is Nazis. Like, that's it. Like, I don't know. I don't, like, I never learned of any good Germans. Except for the ones that were, like, that hid Jews in their houses and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They were good Germans.
All Catholics, apparently, in Poland. Ooh. Because it was really bad. Like, I always thought, like, you always think, like, oh, yeah, I'll be on the right side of history.
Yeah.
Let the fucking Nazis try that in my village.
Yeah.
I'll be hiding everybody from Benjamin in my house. But then you actually, like, deep dive into history and sort of learn about the vaccine, like, oh, how did people get coerced so easy? It's like, because like, if they found out somebody on the bottom floor of like a tower block was hiding Jews in their apartment, they'd kill everybody in the tower block.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I was like, ah, oh, fuck it. No, I'll be ratting out Jews left, right. Don't kill my cousins. Don't kill my mom. Like, please.
No, exactly. Like, it's like, you have to kind of make your like, that's why there weren't that many people there.
Yeah, fear's a strong driver. So it's often like Catholic priests who had just an unadulterated devotion to God who are like, no, I'm going to hide these Jews.
And,
you know, I'll take the risk. And
thanks, priests.
Yeah. And that's why, again, I kind of think like a lot of those contributions from organized religion or spiritual people.
And we've come full circle.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Having relations with their gods, like that, that's the benefits.
Amazing. I have one last question that I ask everyone to close it out, which is, what would be your advice to a new or young comedian?
Don't do it. Run. Be happy. Have boundaries in your life between work and play. Don't like, you think it's all fun and games until eventually it's just, you don't know. It's overwhelming. Stop. You could just find a partner you love and have your evenings free. Have you ever just thought of that?
Oh my God, that sounds so...
if you care about the craft, you'll pursue it and you'll sacrifice everything else. But care about the craft. Zone in on it. Get on social media early. Network. Treat everyone well. You sometimes can't help your mood, but try not as best you can to let that impact other people.
Yeah, I mean, you can be in a bad mood and still treat other people well.
Yeah, just be civil, man. Treat people with respect. You never know who's going to be somebody. That should just be life in general. Do you know what I mean? There's no need to be a dick. Like, and what was the other thing I was going to say? Yeah, find time, devote time to writing, even as things get busier and busier. Just always keep, like, systems work better than goals.
Yeah.
And finally, what I said, get as much sleep as you can. Rest is incredibly important. You won't be yourself on stage if you're not rested.
Well, I'm doing that till 2 p.m. every day.
Good.
Sleep. Okay. That was really good advice.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's kind of stuff I wish I knew when I was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same.
And be more concerned with what's happening on stage and in your notepad than what's happening off stage. As for much fun is the afters of the offstage is if you're pursuing beers, love, drugs, whatever, what you're trying to do is maintain the feeling you've got on stage. So just try and channel and control that energy and appreciate what's happening on stage and recreate that time and time again. Don't chase that after you've just done it.
Exactly. That's great advice. Well, thank you so much for coming to the Comedy Confession Booth.
Thank you for having me. This has been the Comedy Confession Booth with Jamie Lerner. I have been Raoul Coley.
And I'm Jamie Lerner. That's my sexy voice.
That's your sexy voice. And you sound like you could be on a helpline for the AI.
Oh, good. That's
hello, this is Jamie Lerner.
I think when I put the headphones on, I'm like, wow, my voice sounds a lot lower than I expected.
I hate my voice. When I put the headphones on, I'm like, fuck me, I'm like 2 decibels higher than I thought I was. I sound pathetic.
Do your sexy trailer voice again.
Do my sexy trailer voice again.
There it is. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Good night. Oh, that was fun. Right. Sit, guys.